This is Book Public from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. On today's episode, I speak with Camille Bordas about her story collection, One Son Only. Camille Bordas is a novelist. She writes in French and English and is also a literary translator. Her most recent novels are The Material and How to Behave in a Crowd. Her story collection, One Son Only, is diverse and wide-ranging, featuring stories published in The New Yorker and The Paris Review. These are quiet, contemplative stories, but each one turns in moments with an action or a character's utterance or interior monologue that can leave us breathless. Bordas's characters are observant, and they have a self-awareness that makes them very perceptive and yet still lonely. They are introspective and yet might say the wrong thing. Sometimes, even when they know it's the wrong thing, they can't quite help themselves. Bordas is known for writing about family dynamics, about children and parents and the people that we can let into our lives momentarily because of proximity or necessity or because that's just the way their luck goes. There's a dark humor in the stories, an absurdity, wry and witty, but there's also the kind of humor that is really just a spark of total recognition or resonance that leaves us shaking our heads in wonder. There are no giant explosions here. The explosions are deadly small. That is, they are small and quiet and can still leave the character in a chasm of grief, in the throes of a sharp desire, or even an old blunted one that can be as devastating. The tiny moments turn on a giant and universal idea that all of us consider at one time or another, about love, life, art, death. Here now, my interview with Camille Bordas about her story collection, One Son Only. I've been reading you for so long in The New Yorker and read your novels. Just for our listeners who might not be so familiar, tell us about yourself as a writer, as someone who writes in more than one language, also translates, just anything you want to share.
So it's something I think about a lot, like when I started writing also seriously, because I think like a lot of teenagers or people who love book, I started journaling when I was a teen, but I was a very dark French teen. And so all the journal entries were very like sad and sappy. And so when I really started writing fiction, I think I was basically my student's age right now. So 19, 20. And I started writing in French, which is my mother tongue. And I grew up in France. So I wrote a couple novels in French, and then I moved to Chicago to the United States about 15 years ago, I would say. And I started writing in English, first of all, because I love this language, and secondly, because my husband doesn't speak a word of French, and he's a writer as well. And I think like most of our courtship was over email, and he was telling me that I was a great writer in English and I should try it with my fiction. So also so he could know what type of writer I was and on, you know, like what kind of person he married as well. I started writing in English kind of like, it was not a dare, but I was like, I was really enjoying it. But yeah, I started writing in English around, you know, the age of 25, and I started writing a novel, which I published, and then I completely fell in love with the short story form, which is not something I grew up reading as a French child. Like, this is almost a form that we're not taught it as an extinct form, but like the short stories we read in French school are like Maupassant or like something that the Russians did, you know, like there's no French tradition of short story outside of Guy de Maupassant and some fantastical authors. And so it's something I was just not at all, I didn't know anything about it. So I started reading a lot of short stories and then writing them as well. So that's the trajectory in a nutshell.
Wow. Yeah. There's so much that I want to ask you now. First of
all right, go ahead.
How romantic that your courtship was this way, and this language, and I think that's lovely. But also, I'm so interested about this idea about the French and the short story. I love to read everything, but the short story is so special to me. I just love short stories. And I think it was because as a reader, I kind of cut my teeth on short stories, you know, in high school, in middle school, in high school. And this is what was assigned to us for the most part. And, you know, Jack London and these kinds of classic works, maybe some of the Russians too. And certainly The Necklace by
Maupassant. Yeah.
But, It's so exciting to me that there is this story collection out in the world of yours, because mm-hmm. I'm such a fan of your work. And I wonder how the situation was for you in sort of embracing this other genre, because you are a novelist. What is it like for you? What has it been like for you? And I know you've been writing stories a long time, but, and maybe I want to ask you about writing short stories in English as somebody who grew up in France. I don't even know what I'm asking you.
But I think I know where you're going, because I'm also thinking like what it is about short stories that kept me at bay, even though I like as a teen, I read all the time. But I feel like, and I said this thing about as a French person, you kind of assume that they're an old, like previous century thing. And then also, but my mother taught Spanish and Latin American literature in college when I was younger. And like she was reading Rulfo and the short stories by Cortázar. And I read a few and I felt like the need, I mean, I don't know if it's Axolotl or another story by Cortázar, but I was like, they need to have like a strong hook and a strong, be extremely plotty. And I felt like they always had to have a fantastical element. Like, I don't know, I had this notion that they pertained to like a sort of magical realm that didn't correspond to what I like to write. So I felt that it wasn't for me. But then once I started writing them, like the experience is just one of, I shouldn't say true joy, because there's always like difficulties in the writing and stuff. But like when I decide to write a short story, when I have a sort of like little music in mind, I know like what the pace of the story is, because I never know where the story is going, but I kind of have a sense of how fast it will get there, if that makes sense. So I just writing stories is almost like a huge reprieve from writing novels, and that they feel more fun, and that less high stakes, even though like the finished product needs to be like perfect in my mind, you know, but as I write them, I'm like, oh, I can completely screw up. And then it doesn't matter, because then I just, you know, like I can explode this little thing and then see where the pieces fall and start again. It's not as depressing as when a novel is not working. You've been working on it for a year and you start again from scratch. So there's this element of fun. It's like going to the lab and like see what works. And there's this true excitement as like similar to like doing a puzzle, which I loved doing when I was a child. Like there's some like childlike wonder in it, which I realized that writing novels, even though I love novels and my dream in life would be to write a great novel, they're just the psychological toll is a lot heavier. Short stories seem like more fun. And even though I don't really write about fun things, like the process of writing them is a lot more fun.
Oh my, this again, there's so many things I want to ask you. So first of all, you write in a very, I don't know, how do I say it? In a very classic mode. So I feel like, yeah. Oh my gosh, like Camille Bordas has read probably so many short story collections in her life, because she writes in this incredible classic mode. And I think everything I've seen where like on a YouTube video, an interview with you, or read online, you always reference philosophers. I mean, you always reference writers. And I'm always sort of trying to figure out like what are the literary influences for you as a story writer? Okay, so many things, but I know that you've evoked the famous quote from Doctorow about writing is like driving at night in the fog, and you can only see as far as your headlights, but you can make the whole trip that way. I think is the quote, and I feel that way about your stories also. Okay. And one more thing, there's so much that you've said that reminds me of the story Colorín Colorado, about this idea of the teacher, of the writing professor and the student, and this idea that the student had about writing and how long does it take to write a story. And there's so much to your response that I think runs so deep around the idea of, my gosh, even the emotional labor of writing a story, especially these stories. So I once again, no question. What can you mine from my
I mean, what I'm curious to, like, it's just, you said that I quote philosophers, and I'm like, I am so uneducated as far as philosophy goes. I'm like, in what interviews did I quote a philosopher? I'm like, so I now I'm a little bit nervous. Probably I misquoted a philosopher if I did, because I really know not a lot about philosophy, even though, you know, like I study it a little bit in school, like all of that knowledge is gone. But it is true that in terms of like the question of inspiration is always a very tricky one. But because I do read fiction all the time, but I don't find like almost two, they seem completely separate in my mind, the reading for pleasure and writing. Like, I don't know if it's possible. Like, I always tell myself this, but I never read a specific author because I want to emulate something from their style. Like, I read purely for pleasure and not for work. And I don't know if I'm lying to myself, but like, that's how I see it. But when I read nonfiction, however, I do, it gives me more pause. Sometimes certain concepts, certain ideas like kind of resonate. I don't know why, but like they trigger something in me that gives me an idea for a story, for instance. So I think maybe more than philosophers, I tend to read a lot of ethnographies and anthropology. Like that's my background in France. That's what I had my master's in. And I realized that a lot of, sociologists, would describe, very simply social situation, social interactions. And I don't know. And this, like, for instance, I read like an ethnography of like gambling in Vegas by this woman, Natasha Dow. I think that, I don't remember. No, Shul, Natasha Dow Shul. I think that's her name. And just there was, I learned so much about gambling and the way the machines in Vegas are designed and how they're designed to keep people hooked. And that just like, I don't know what it is yet, but I know I'm going to write something and not about Vegas, but that kind of like mirrors the feeling I had while reading this ethnography, if that makes sense. Like, it's just, it makes me feel something. And I'm like, I need to translate this into a story. So yeah. So my inspiration comes from mostly nonfiction, weirdly, and then reading fiction for pure pleasure. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I was talking to somebody about your stories, and I said, I just love these stories. They remind me of all of my favorite story collections and story writers. And the person said, like who? And I honestly could not rattle off the names. I was just sort of like, I don't know, like all the best ones. I was just like, but I couldn't put my finger on what it was. So so let me ask you this. So you're telling me about the inspiration that you glean from the things that you read that are true stories. So I'm thinking now of, sorry, my brain. I'm thinking now of like the lottery in Almería, right? So that's such a cool, they're all so wonderful. But that story about how, you know, sort of like the psychology of like, well, if the winning ticket was sold in this place, like, don't even bother buying it there the next time. Yeah. Like all of these very real things. And, it reminds me of this. So Frank O'Connor, right, as a big short story nerd, I'm going to talk about Frank O'Connor.
Go ahead.
In The Lonely Voice, you know, he talks about how all stories are about loss, and this is the access point, right, is the loss. Mm-hmm. And this is so true for your characters in that they're lost, or they lost something, or they're just so bereft, and maybe they don't really understand why, and there's this kind of ennui, or there's just something missing. And I think this idea, it's so complex. I mean, it's very easy to say, oh, all stories are about loss. Look for it. Put your finger on it in the story. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
But I feel like the way that your characters are moving through the story with this idea of loss or being, you know, bereft or not even having a clue what's missing, and that becomes the problem. They're on a constant search, or there's even a kind of loss by proxy, I feel sometimes. So, that's so fascinating to me. I don't know. What do you think about this idea of your own characters and the losses that they are experiencing in stories? Where does that idea come from?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to pinpoint, obviously, but it's something as basic as I would know how to write about someone who has no problems and who is happy. But I kind of want to challenge myself to do it. Because yeah, like it's true that putting all these stories together, because I've been writing them over the last 10 years, like I realized that there was indeed like a set, like some common themes, like, yeah, there is loss, there is grief, but I will say like not to like, speak too highly of myself, but like I really do try to make these stories funny because I love writing. Like everything I love to read has like humor in it, so it's not like completely dreary. But it is like something. I need something I don't know how to explain. Let me think about this, because like even in Coloring Colorado, I don't even know that like the sense of loss is not like, it's not like someone, it's not exactly grief. I think she's just aging, you know? So it's just like, I think that's, we're always in the process of losing something, even though it's just like we lost yesterday, you know? So it's not like necessarily like big life changes, but it's people who can't really live in the present, who I realize are most people actually. So I think it's just in terms of, how do I think about these characters? I think I just write what I know in terms, and not meaning like I write about myself or people who resemble me, but I write people who resemble the people I talk to, and they can be younger than me. They can be my students. They can be my 10-year-old niece. They can be like an older friend. Like it's just like I realized that everyone is constantly struggling with something. And so, yeah, I think the only thing I think about, not the only thing, but one thing that's really important for me is to write believable characters. So nothing crazy happens to them. And that's something I like that the student in Colorado tells her professors, just nothing happens in her story. They're not very plotty, but like a lot happens under the surface. And the second you start having a deep conversation with someone, it's going to very quickly be around loss, I think.
Yes, yes.
It's not just stories. I think it's just life. It's the way it's designed. Yes. We all have something in common. And that's, unfortunately, it's that.
You mentioned the professor and that story. Yes, the idea of aging is so, it's something that you come to as a reader, that mm-hmm. that you lay out in such a nuanced way. And then there'll be a line like, when the person is telling her to sit on a certain chair because it'll be a nice contrast with the gray hair. And there's like, there's just this, and then you're sort of like, and so much time has transpired. And Adriana's older. And so, yes. I want to ask you about the humor, and I want to ask you about your 10-year-old niece. I want to ask you about that. So do people tell you how funny your writing is? And by that, I mean, I find myself, and not just with like Manny in the material, in the novel, but I found myself reading the stories, like smiling or chuckling or like wanting to tell somebody about what I just read so that we could share a laugh together. But then I also found it something like I could not repeat it without just like reading that whole first section of a story or something. Because they're not like, yeah.
It means I did my job.
Yes.
Really, that's the best compliment, honestly. Like, yeah, the jokes. Yeah. Like, I mean, they're not jokes. I think it's
they're
mostly
not.
Like there is in dialogue or in like someone having a weird thought. But yeah, like.
And it's. Yeah. It's not riddles. You're right. It's not jokes to be like repeated or get a load of this and you just kind of tell the person what you read. But it's so amusing or so sort of unlikely. And even saying something profound like the way, the professor feels in Colorín Colorado of she says something like, she felt like shame and superiority in equal measure, which on its own is so dark to me and not very funny. But I can sort of be like, oh, ha, 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 and then realize, oh, I know exactly what that feels like.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. It's just like after chuckling, I'm sort of moved by the resonance, by the recognition of that humanity, of that very human thing. And it's absurdity because life is so absurd and these characters are going through things that, I mean, it's not like they're out of this world or so unlikely. These are things that really happen, right?
Yeah.
I wonder, there's dark humor, but then there's something else happening. It's like it's this coin the comedians are like the saddest people, but it's like this coin of that, of like your stories are carrying just a raft of emotions,
Well, that's really nice to hear. Like, yeah, I almost want to leave it there. But yeah, no, because you're right. Like, I do, like, in the beginning of your question, you were asking if people tell me all the time that I'm funny in my writing. And I do hear it a lot. And it used to kind of hurt my feelings because, like, no, but this is a serious book also. Like, with my first book in particular, the French book, I was told it was funny. And I was, but it's a really sad book. You know, like, I kind of took it as not an insult, but, like, I didn't do my job properly. And then I decided to lean into it. And I was like, you know, like, everything I like reading, it has humor in it. So why not, you know, accept that, you know, like, if I'm good at this thing, I should keep doing it. But yeah, with I think in particular, like, I give a couple of readings of the title story once on only in front of an audience, which, yeah, I did it last summer. And I was really surprised by the reaction at certain points, like the an explosion of laughter at a line that I did think was funny, but I thought was mostly, like, extremely dark about the failure of a father to relate to his daughter. And yeah, I thought, like, it's what you're saying, like, the line itself is funny, but what's behind it is, like, this guy does not understand his daughter and has kind of, like understood that it would never happen, basically. And so, like, it's kind of the darkest thing, but, like, the reaction was pure laughter. And so, like, maybe it's what you said, and, like, a split second later, they were like, wait, I chuckled, but it's not funny. So I don't know, but it is true that I'm trying to go for that. I like to be disturbed in this way. I mean, I'm really glad to hear what you're saying, because I think what I'm trying to do, and it's impossible to know if I'm successful, is to, like, write the kind of stuff that I like reading. And the way you're describing, yeah, like, I want to laugh, and at the same time, I want to be disturbed a little bit at having laughed at that. So I'm glad that in some parts it works.
Yes, it's a spark of recognition, even if it's it's not resonant because it's me. Or it's an experience that happened to me, or that's like something I experienced, but it's just a spark of recognition about people. You're such a noticer of people in these, you know, in their pajamas, you know, at night, you know, painting something.
Yeah.
I love the way you write children and how to behave in a crowd, for example. But in Once and Only, the story that you mentioned, and I love the way you write parents and even parents that are sort of in the background in a story. And I love the way you write men, you know, a male character. And again, no, I have absolutely no question for you, Camille. I'm just telling you that the stories go in so many different places. And I was thinking about the Doctorow quote and the endings of your stories. So the endings of your stories, I've been really trying to study and like, you know, like when you turn over a cross stitch or an embroidery to see how did they do that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when I start a short story in this collection, I sort of like have to, you know, brace myself a little bit. I buckle in and I'm reading your story and I see the familiar scenery I'm going. And then I keep sort of driving along, and then I really am seeing new spaces, and then I like what I see and I keep going, and then it starts to go really fast and then it slows down and then it speeds up. And when I come to a stop, it's almost like the end of a carnival ride. Like I look up and I have to look around and get my bearings, and I've landed and it all makes sense to me. Like it all makes sense to me. So this is what I have concluded. This is I'm a failure at studying the endings of your stories, because these are the only mixed metaphors that I have.
Well, that's great. Okay. So in terms of like being a noticer, like I do think it is not the entirety of my job, but a great, I take pleasure in noticing, so it's not a problem. But it's true that sometimes like people are really surprised that I don't have children because I wrote the parents so well and I wrote the children so well. So how the hell would I know? I'm like, I'm around parents and children all the time. Like, I think I can like imagine, like I'm a fiction writer. I'm not like, I don't write essays about myself. So I can obviously imagine. And like, if I did my job well and they are surprised that I was able to, but I think I somewhat resent the idea that a fiction writer couldn't possibly imagine different lives than her own. Like, I'm like, that's the whole point. That's the whole job. And so Yeah, I'm like actually like talking about nonfiction that I read. Like right now, I'm reading this book that I'm loving by Sidney Lumet. I don't know if you say Lumet or Lumet, but it's called Making Movies, and he's talking about actors, like an actor saying he needs to make sure that he has chemistry with the female lead in order to like for the movie to be made. And Sidney Lumet is like, but you know, you're an actor. If there's no chemistry, you make it happen. Like, if you have to murder her in the rest of the script, like, do you need to feel like you want to murder her? Like, you know, like an actor is supposed to be able to imagine, like, to act in all circumstances. And, like, I'm a fiction writer. I'm supposed to imagine, you know, a little boy's life, like in How to Behave in a Crowd or the story Beyond. I was never a 12-year-old boy, but I can like it, the fun of my job is also to imagine that and to like. Do justice to that and not present this 12-year-old boy as the worst 12-year-old boy that I've ever met, just like a full human being at 12 years old, at 12 years old. And so I don't know. So in terms of noticing, that's like I think like most writers, I was a shy child and I just try to gather clues, you know, like see how other people like acted and if I could learn from them. And so I think it transferred into my professional life. Like I just except I talk to them now on top of observing them. So yeah, so that's kind of it. And in terms of like the shape of the stories and the endings, like I really like what you said. I try to not overthink it, but there's a kind of like understanding when you reach like the ending of something and you need to kind of slow down and accelerate. And it's kind of it sounds it's hard to explain this process, but I trust it so far.
Well, it's working, I gotta say. But it's so interesting to me that you're reading a book about Sidney Lumet. So,
Why?
you know, because he's this director. Like, one of my favorite movies is The Verdict with Paul Newman.
Yeah.
And I think it's like 81, 82 movie or something. And so I don't know anything about him except that he's like this, you know, well-regarded American director of these hits from the, you know, from maybe more the 2000s, but that's so interesting to me that you're reading it.
Well, it's a friend of mine who recommended it. I was in Paris to see my mother for Christmas, and I saw my best friend there, and we were in a bookstore. She was shopping for her husband, and she said, "This book by Sidney Lumet is great," because we were in a bookstore that specialized in cinema and you know. And so then I came home and I bought it, and she was right. It's a really great book. It's a fun book. I love books about process, and I think this whole thing, like I haven't finished it, but chapter by chapter, what it's like for the director to work with a writer, what it's like to work with the editor, the production design, and actors. The chapter about actors is great. I haven't seen The Verdict though. Now I have to, but yeah, like I do love many of his movies, like Network, Duck Day Afternoon, things like he made like a ton of movies, and.
Oh, beautiful. I'm going to look for that book.
Yeah, I think you will like it a lot.
So every once in a while, this is a perennial thing. I'll read about like the resurgence of the short story. The short story is making a comeback. And I often think, well, for me, it has never gone anywhere. It has never, what is the resurgence about? and then I suppose the statement could have something to do with the fickleness of the publishing world, or you know, reading trends, and there could maybe there's always been a like kind of a little bit of a myopic view of the genre. Like people will tell me, I don't find short stories very satisfying. Once in a while, somebody will say something like that, and then I stop speaking to them. But then. But what is your sense of it? Like, what do you want? There's so many questions. What do you want readers to discover in a collection, in a story collection, like One Son Only? One thing of many things? What could be one thing?
Well, it's okay. I will say that I understand people who like say like who are reluctant to read short stories because like it's weird because the shorter and shorter attention span, so it should lead to more people reading short stories, but it looks like the trend is people reading longer and longer books, but I understand wanting to be immersed in something. If you want to devote your attention to something, you want to be consumed by it and spend like days and days and days with it. But to me, it's like the short stories are like, as I was saying, writing them and also like reading a great one for me is really a burst of excitement and a sort of renewed excitement for life. But what I would want people, I mean, I don't I don't know. It's really hard to know. It's really hard for me to pitch this book. You know, like I think it's strange because I'm really proud of it, and at the same time, I'm really wary in my life. I don't want to encourage people to read my work and then have them read it and hate it because there's such limited time in life. So I don't know. I think it is. I don't know. I have absolutely no idea actually how to answer this question. What I want to. Like I want them to enjoy the writing and feel for the characters and like be transported and like think about life a little bit differently. You know, like it sounds like super megalomaniac in some ways, but also I just want them to enjoy themselves. Like I don't know. It's weird. Like reading is my favorite thing in the world, so I always assume like, you know, like if you read a few random lines of this book and you like it, maybe it's for you. Like I don't know. I don't know how to. How to encourage people to read short stories. If I knew, I would be, you know.
It is so marvelous. It is so excellent. It
Thank
is
you.
my current favorite thing. I've been carrying this book around. And yes, that's what I do. I just sort of, there's this like osmotic thing. I just carry them around in my bag for days and days and days, even after I finish
Yeah.
reading it.
Well, that's great to hear. Yeah, I mean that, like, yeah, if it could do that, yeah, that's what I want it to do for people. So they want to carry it around and recommend it to a friend because it's a. I mean, I think like sad things happen in the book, but I think these stories are like ultimately like warm stories. Like not, you know, you don't. Yeah, I don't know. Like this feeling of warmth, and you want to share this with someone you love. And yeah, I think it's a. Yeah, I think that's what I would want.
Yeah, you know, I have this feeling about it, like you enter these worlds and they're all the stories are so different and all the characters are so different and all the situations. And I always think about this idea that somebody said to me once that every family has a secret, and if you don't think that's true, the secret is about you. So
Yeah.
I was thinking about like and they're not secrets in that kind of, you know, in that sort of it will knock over your life and you'll never recover from it sorts of
Yeah.
secrets, but just like the things that we keep, we are in short stories. I feel like one of the things that I admire so much is that the characters are mysteries to each other and the characters remain mysteries to us as readers. And
Yep.
the stories don't answer questions in some pat way. They actually present more questions for us about humanity, about how we spend our time, about how we age, about how we choose to treat each other. There's something so elemental there and so essential for me to be able to do that. And maybe it is not, maybe not a short attention span, but because I love the experience, so I want to go into the story and into another story and into another story. And the brevity of it maybe is what allows me to, you know, to feed my addiction. But
Yeah.
Camille Bordas, I cannot thank you enough. I'm so thrilled and so honored to be able to talk to you. I cannot believe I'm talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much. This was a great interview. You did, yeah. I'm so flattered. I feel like I shouldn't have heard so many compliments in half an hour. I don't understand.
I'm sorry. I couldn't help it.
I'll recover. But yeah, I was not expecting that.
Camille Bordas is the author of the story collection, One Son Only. This has been Book Public from Texas Public Radio. Jacob Rosati composed our theme music. Dan Katz is Texas Public Radio's news director. I'm Yvette Benavides.